Our next session is going to be an insurance risk deep dive with Pauline Blight-Johnson. Pauline leads the team responsible for AMP's life insurance, disability and income protection products and a range of ordinary and superannuation wealth management products. During a career spanning more than 20 years of actuarial and financial management experience, Pauline has held a number of senior executive posts in life insurance, both in Australia and overseas. So please welcome Pauline now.
Thanks, Bezena. Interesting times for us. I'm sure it won't have escaped anybody's attention that 2012 and 2013 haven't exactly proven to be stellar years for life insurance in Australia. In fact, for many of us in this room, it's probably been some of the hardest times we've seen in our careers. Not all of us, but many of us. And it makes me reflect that all those times that I, and I'm sure others, have thought, gee, why do they make those actuarial exams so hard? This is why. The reality of life insurance is that it's not always smooth sailing. The reality of any form of insurance is that we take on risk and we can't always see what's going to happen. And so we need to take a really special role in that as actuaries. It's our role, it's our job to stay calm and to help steer the industry through these times, to learn as we go and to accept that we're not always going to know the answers. But we really have a very special role to play as a voice of reason. And as I said, to watch very closely as things emerge. So let's go through what on earth is going on. This chart is just the reported experience profits, you can tell they're negative, of the big five companies that are listed on the Australian Stock Exchange that have, for which we could find public data. So this is simply numbers that have been reported through the financial disclosures. They go back, in case anybody can't read it, their half-year results for going back to the beginning of 2011. You can see there the profits stand out, as in there aren't very many of them. So clearly this has been a universally challenging time, I would say. It's not just one company and it's not just one half. I think one of the interesting learnings for me through this period, which has really been dawning on me over the last couple of years, is that we think of volatility in insurance as being a month-on-month, a day-on-day, individual-on-individual, half-on-half kind of a proposition. I think what's becoming increasingly clear is that actually volatility doesn't work like that. It runs in time periods and it goes in runs. So what that means is we need to be prepared to manage through potential periods of poor experience, not just for a half or for a year, but to be really prepared for that for potentially a period of time. We need to learn, we need to be proactive, and we need to understand the drivers. When you get your first half of bad experience, and I won't be the only person who's had this experience in the room, the very first thing everybody asks you as an actuary is it volatility or is there a trend? Now, unfortunately, we're actuaries, not psychics. So, and of course, trends are only apparent in hindsight. But I think what we need to get much better at is trying to understand what it is that we're doing to contributing to the issues. Sure, there is absolutely volatility in insurance. We know that. That's how we make our money and we can't run away from that. But we also need to accept that we can make things easier or harder for ourselves. So what's going on at the moment? What are the underlying drivers and why has it been so universally difficult for the last few years? Because I'm an actuary, I'm not very creative. All I could think of was a perfect storm. I'm sure I'm not the first person who said this recently. But it strikes me that we are in what you may call a perfect storm at the moment of change. Firstly, we know the economy has not been what we're used to seeing for many years. Sure, the Australian economy has fared better than others throughout the GFC, but having said that, we know it's been a two-speed economy and the parts of the economy to which we as an insurance industry are more exposed have fared worse than the parts to which we're less exposed. We all know, as a basic fact, that the disability elements of our portfolio, both TPD and income protection, fare worse during periods where the economy is tougher. Part of that is, unfortunately, some behaviour that we don't like in some claimants. There is no doubt that there is a little bit of that goes on. But genuinely, I think we shouldn't jump to the assumption that people are having a go. I think what we find is when the economy is going really, really well, there are a number of people in our portfolios who actually have conditions that are claimable, but they work through because they're interested and it's fun and they're making good money. And when, of course, they have less opportunities in the workplace, they then decide to claim on those conditions quite legitimately. So it does, it makes it tougher. Interestingly, though, the Australian economy, as we know, has not fared as badly as others around the world. Yet, from my experience, the difficulties we're seeing in our industry are greater than what others are seeing around the world. So there's got to be more than just that going on. I think we saw throughout the GFC some very, very strong sales in the life risk business. Now, in those days, we all just went, you beauty, about time, it's our turn. We banked it all, that's fantastic. What we're seeing now is 2 or 3 years later, isn't that odd, we've got very high lapses. So I think there's a lesson there for all of us, that as we're seeing that bulge of sales age a couple of years, perhaps it shouldn't be so surprising that we're seeing the lapses that we're seeing now. Again, part of that is just we always see this lapse pattern that about 2 years in we get higher lapses, and part of it maybe causes us to question some of those sales, whether they were actually the best sale to be making at the time, whether the sale was completely appropriate. We've had FOFA come in. For those who aren't at the front end, I think it's really easy to underestimate the difference that FOFA is going to make to our industry. The future of financial advice, the change to best interest duty, the change to the financial arrangements for advisers, I think is very profound. And I think it's one of those things that we'll look back in 5 or 10 years' time and say, my goodness, I didn't notice at the time, but look how dramatically that's just changing the market. Certainly, the best interest duty calls into question many of the preferred supplier arrangements we've had in the industry and puts under pressure the terms versus price of all the products. Now, clearly we here in this room know that the only two, that price and the product terms are not the only two things on which you should rate a product. But unless we actually do a very good job of educating, that's where the market will naturally go. And we run a real risk of being on a race to the bottom for price. So we need to think very differently about how we meet consumer needs and how we best educate around what it means to be insured. We have baby boomers who are ageing. What does that do? Well, one, they tend to claim more, but more importantly, they tend to lapse more. So we have a bit of a bulge going through the book of people reaching the age where they really don't need so much insurance anymore. Interestingly, I've had a look at our book, and I think that's causing not as big an impact as I had originally thought. It's only causing us about 10% of the increase we've seen in our lapses has been due to this, the ageing of the book. But it's definitely there. We're seeing a lot more short-termism and consumer mobility. I didn't know how to really express this. I don't mean it to be a negative, but if we think about ourselves now, our outlooks are so different from what they were. Our industry grew up in an era where people actually formed a lifetime partnership with their insurance company. So the collector came to the front door, you decided to go with AMP or MLC or National Mutual or whoever it was, and that was it. You were then in a lifetime relationship with that insurer. These days, people don't even form lifetime marriages, let alone relationships with their insurers. Our whole outlook on time has changed. The availability of information over the internet, we need to accept that people think about it differently and people don't see the need to commit for that period of time. And I think as we run a risk of an insurance industry of saying, well, because our industry structure relies on this to a great extent, how do we make them stay longer? That's an interesting question, and we should absolutely explore consumer loyalty and how we can create consumer loyalty. But I think the other part of that question needs to be, how do we adapt to meet the reality of today? How do we adapt not to require it so that our profitability isn't fundamentally dependent on them staying with us for that period of time? The digital revolution is adding to that. People want to expect to be able to change their car insurance every year, but we expect them with life insurance to keep it for 10 years. How is that going to play out? Medical information and anti-selection. I think this one's really interesting. I think we're just starting to see the tip of the iceberg here. But with the digital revolution, with increasing globalisation, it's now possible to send away to the US for a medical test, take some sort of whatever it is that they require and post it back out, and get the results of that test and have it never hit the Australian medical record system. What does that mean for our underwriting and for our risk selection? Clearly we're seeing increases in levels of stress and anxiety in the population. I'm not sure that we're actually seeing increases in levels of stress and anxiety, but we're certainly seeing increases in the willingness of people to discuss it, to go and seek help, and to take time off work for it. And that's not a bad thing for society, but it is a very different challenge for us to manage as an industry that's grown up with a very definitive kind of a claims proposition. You're dead or you're not. We can tell whether you're dead or you're not. You've broken your arm or you're not. We can tell if you've broken your arm or you're not. If we're going into these areas where people require more cover for less objective elements, we need to change very differently the way we think about things and the way we write our policies and the way we assess them. I've called it old age mortality improvement. One of the things that's kept us alive, really, as an industry for a very long time is that despite the fact that we can make some mistakes along the way, every year mortality gets that little bit better, which kind of gives us a bit of a free kick to cover up some of the other mistakes we might be making and as we're learning. What we've seen over the last couple of years is that whilst mortality has continued to improve, it's actually the greatest improvements have been in the ages that we don't insure. Coincidentally, the ages where people have lifetime annuities. So it's actually created a double whammy for us. But we are seeing that the greatest improvements over the last 5 years have been in people aged about 80 and above. So we're not getting the same pickup in the insured lives that we typically do. We're seeing increasing activity of lawyers. This is worrying me a lot. I don't know what other people are seeing, but we're seeing as a proportion of our TPD claims a very, very strongly increasing representation of lawyers, legally represented claims. And what worries me more is that many of these claims, it's not a case of people have made the claim, they've struggled to get any traction with insurance companies, so they've gone and sought a lawyer. The lawyer is attached to the claim from the very beginning, creating questions as to whether the lawyer was the one that actually initiated the idea of the claim. Again, we can't shy away from claims that if we insured somebody for an event and the events happened, we absolutely should be there to come good on that. Some of the problems with the legally represented claims, of course, is that they can be very old, they can be for small amounts, and it can be very difficult for us to spend the money to challenge that appropriately and to assess it appropriately. The other thing I think is becoming increasingly clear is that as actuaries, we have priced our insurance for many, many years based on not incidents. We think it's incidents, but it's not incidents. It's based on claims that actually come in the door. And there's been a natural difference between claims and incidents. Incidents have been higher than claims. There's been some proportion of the incidents that never makes its way back to the insurance industry. We never know about it. And that's an implicit assumption in what we're doing. Now, that implicit assumption is clearly changing as people become more aware of the insurance that they have. So we need to think about what that means for us. And lastly, I would say we've seen many years of underinvestment in this industry. Any investment that I've seen really across the whole industry, I'm not just speaking about any one company, I've seen many companies over the last 10 years, really all the investment's gone in the front end, electronic underwriting and getting business on the books. And that's been perfectly natural because in any business environment, you put the money where you need it the most. And the insurance business has been making money for a period of time, so nobody realised the investment that was necessary in this business. And I think what's becoming increasingly apparent across the industry is that we didn't actually invest in the tools that would enable us to manage this as actively as we need to during the tough times. So all that comes together, and it's no wonder that things are a little bit tricky. But what are we doing as insurance professionals that make it worse? Well, the step premium is a really interesting product design that I've been spending a bit of time thinking about recently, and it's only recently occurred to me that we're the only market in the world where this is the majority of the business. We've also only been writing it for, 15, 20 years in pretty significant volumes. So there's nobody in the world that knows how this business ages, or did know. We're starting to find how it ages. And the reality is, of course, it gets very tricky to manage as it ages because the impact of lapses year on year, which are always to some degree anti-selective, with increasing step rates, really have quite an adverse impact on the book as it does age. And interestingly, I think when the experience started turning bad, I had a number of conversations around the industry, and almost to a conversation that was, we've had a look at it, it's the old book, not the new book. First reaction is, didn't they mess it up back then? We don't need to do anything because we're not doing anything wrong. And then I think over time it dawned on people, hang on, there's no reason why this new book can't become tomorrow's old book. And what are the things that create the old book behaving the way they are? And the impact of step premiums, how's that playing through? And I think that's something that we need to think very carefully about as an industry. We're seeing increasing replacement ratios. Replacement ratios worry the life out of me. There are some things you can price for. To my mind, replacement ratios on IP are one thing you cannot price for. It's got to come back to the motivation of the individual to get back to work. And we're seeing, I know I was asked to quote on some group schemes a couple of years ago with 90% plus replacement ratios. I mean, who wants to go back to work for that, really? So I think we've got to think very carefully about that. We're seeing increasingly generous and vague disability definitions, and I think we've got to be careful too. One of the projects we're undertaking at the moment is I'm getting all the claims assessors every day to tell me everything that's made their day hard today. So I think sometimes we forget, we sit in our little product world, our actuarial world, and we design these definitions that sound fantastic, and we have no idea how they actually implement them in the coal face. But I think we've got to listen to our clients people and say, what was it today that made your day hard? Was it one word in a definition that we never intended to be that way? Or we didn't realise the impact that that would have. I think we've got to really take a lot of learning from that. We're seeing increasing automatic acceptance limits. That, again, worries me because I think that's something we cannot price for. To my mind, you know, pricing, if you get your pricing wrong, it's not great, but there's a limit to how far wrong you can be to the dollar damage that can do. If you get things that go to policyholder motivation or to anti-selection wrong, the impact on that can be multiples of the premium that you charge. So that's where, because we only expect, say, 1 in 1,000 people to claim. So I really encourage everyone to think very, very carefully about things like high AALs and, as I said, high replacement ratios. And then clearly our advisor remuneration structures are quite out of touch with the reality of our current paradigm, of our current relationship that we have with our customers. So what do we need to change? To get sustainable change, this is the way I'm starting to think about it, and I'd encourage others to think similarly. What typically happens when we get a bad half or two bad halves is everybody freaks out and runs around and says, what are we going to do? We've got to stop the leakage, and we focus on process. Now, that is absolutely the right place to stop, to start. Not to stop, to start. Okay, what are we doing that's making things worse for ourselves? You know, everyone, run to the claims team. What are the claims? It's always, you know, the claims team. What are they doing wrong? Okay, so let's look at their processes. Let's tighten up where we need to. Let's make sure we're not losing money unnecessarily. But my view is by the time it gets to the claims team are like the little child in the Netherlands with their finger in the hole in the dike. They need to keep their finger in there, and we need as many claims assessors as we have holes, and we need to do all that stuff really, really well. But the pressure doesn't start there. The pressure builds up right through the system. And if we're going to change it sustainably, we need to go further back in the process and look at the pressure. The second thing, I think, is the data and tools. And this is where I think we need to take a lesson from the general insurance world. So as an industry, I would contend that we don't really have the quality of data and tools that we should have for 2013, or certainly that the general insurance industry does, to enable us to have at our fingertips exactly what's going wrong in our business. We need to be able to see this stuff quickly. We need to be able to see it in a granular way so we know what's causing it, so we know what to change. But at the bottom of the pyramid, the absolute foundation to me comes back to motivation. We've got to work better with policyholder and individual motivation. It comes back to things like replacement ratios, wanting to return to work. To my mind, if we get a product, a system, a process that works naturally with human motivation, we can get away with weaknesses in process. If we get a system that sets up human motivation to work against us, the best process in the world will only get us so far. So we need to really remind people what we're here for. Insurance is to cover people for unforeseen, dramatic events in their lives and to do what we can to get their life back to where it was beforehand. It's not to pay for a lifestyle change so they can go surfing for whatever. It's not to be a bingo event as we're seeing in some trauma policies. And we've got to understand that when we're dealing with claimants, they're typically under periods of intense stress in their lives. These are huge dramatic events often for people. And they won't behave as we predict they should or as we might think is rational and logical. So I think we've got to get much better if we're going to make a sustainable change at understanding what motivates people and how we can work with that and have that work with us and help us to help them. So how should we respond? Firstly, the first lever, of course, is premium increases. Premium increases, as we all know, help to some extent. They're not the magic bullet. They're not the universal panacea because it's quite easy to end up in a downward spiral. And, of course, we need to be very, very careful. It doesn't help just to reprice the back book, which I know is a temptation, and keep your new business rates low, because all that does is increase lapses and just intensify the problem. So we need to have the courage to do the premium increases we need to across both parts of our book. We need to have a very close look at step versus level premium and the sustainability of the two offers and how we can actually create more certainty for policyholders. Now, there are some situations where stepped premium is exactly the way to go. But we do need to think about Do policyholders genuinely understand what's going to happen as they hit their 50s right when they need this insurance cover? And how are we doing them a service in the way we're selling the product? We need to look very, very seriously at our distribution costs. By this, I don't mean what we pay to the advisor. I mean what it costs to get the product to the individual. We have created, if you step back and look at it, a very crazy industry. First of all, we actually can't sell our own products anymore. So if anyone walks into an AMP shop, we're obliged to tell them if they can get a product cheaper from the guy next door. Now, you walk into Vodafone, you're not obliged to tell them they can get a product cheaper from Optus. We've created that environment. That has good things, that has bad things. But what it does do is it adds to the cost. Now, for some policyholders, that's absolutely appropriate, typically at the top end of the net worth scale. But there are other policyholders or other individuals who just need some cover in place. And our current distribution paradigm is not meeting the needs of those people very well. And the way that we've got to, the only way we're going to be able to meet those needs is to get the cost down dramatically. Also, if we're moving from a situation in which we expect people to be with us for 40 years to where we expect them to be with us for somewhere maybe 5 years, again, we've got to change the cost of accessing and meeting their needs. I don't know how to do that yet. But as I said, it's not about where the cost arises in the value chain. It's actually about finding a way to get to people and meet their needs in a much more cost-effective way while still obviously retaining integrity and looking after their interests. We need to look at our advisor remuneration structures. We need to increase our focus on returning people to work rather than just paying them to go surfing. And we need to work, as I said, with the current societal realities and motivation. So I want to leave you with two thoughts. Our purpose is to pay claims, right? None of this, in this difficult period of time, none of this should be interpreted as the industry trying not to pay claims. If we close our doors to claims, we may as well shut up shop and go out of business. We are here to pay claims when people need us and to be there to support the Australian population as they need it. But our job is to do this sustainably. To do it sustainably, I think there's a couple of things we need to do. We need to ensure that we're ensuring definable events that are random. We need to ensure we're able to sensibly price it and that the risk mitigation mechanisms we put in place work in periods of stress. And we need to work again, as I said, with policyholder motivation. And the last thing I'd ask you to remember is learn from this. This period of time will be a great learning for all of us. Pass it on to future generations. Keep the exams challenging. And remember, during the next boom time, the only thing preventing us from this thing from happening again is the voice of the boring old, very reasonable, very experienced actuary reminding people what happens if you don't keep your head during the good times. So now I think we'll have questions during the panel.
Yes, that's right.
Thanks.